Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik, Eine kleine Nachtmusik from 1787 on Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. This is what Western civilization is all about. This is the antithesis of the barbarians that Obama seems to love so much. Listen to it. Listen to it and weep as you realize this all started. Well, let me backtrack a little bit. Let's just listen for a minute. You see, last night I went to a cocktail party, so to speak, at a museum in San Francisco. And a museum which still displays pieces of art by some of the great masters of Western civilization in the middle of a city, San Francisco, which has dedicated itself to the destruction of all that is good about Western civilization. So as I stood there in the hall with works by the great artist Rodin, the great bronzes of Rodin, the man who created that great sculpture, the thinker, I think about what's going on. I think about the barbarians that our government seems to bend over backwards for. The throwbacks who have given the world nothing for thousands of years. The throwbacks who sit and seethe and create nothing but hatred. And as I watched the young ladies in the quartet, I stood there next to one of the Rodin sculptures, and I stood there with a glass of bad red wine, by the way, some of the poorest red wine I've had in years, but it was very cold out. And I watched the crowd of white people hovering around the buffet table as though they had not eaten in years. As the gates were open, the barbarians broke in, and the barbarians devoured the quiche and the bad wine and the Swedish meatballs and the grapes and the cheese. I couldn't believe it. These are white people over 50, 60 years old, clamoring as though they had just been released from a concentration camp, clamoring as though they had not eaten in 5 years. But strangely enough, I was the only one who heard the music, at least I think so, because I took my glass of bad rotgut red wine, and I stood and watched these young ladies performing. Actually, there were three young ladies and a young man. And frankly, I started to shudder at the beauty of it. It just came right through me because I was standing around some of the greatest art that I love. I've always loved the Rodin sculptures. I've always loved the Rodin Gallery here at the Palace of the Legion of Honor. And I felt honored to stand there. But as I looked up at the ceiling and felt the music coming through me and watched the young ladies literally quivering, becoming part of the instrument themselves, somehow all I could think of was that the barbarians that this government under Obama is so interested in protecting, the barbarians who the Defense Department is on the side of the barbarians instead of our soldiers who would defend these young women, all I could think about is what these barbarians would do to these young women. They would put them in burkas and they wouldn't let them play the violin. They would smash Rodin statues. They would burn the paintings of Europe. And all I could think about was, how did this start? How did my great country, this once powerful nation, degenerate to such a point? Well, I remember how. I remember how, and I'm going to give a testimony right now. This all began with the feminist movement back in the 60s as they chanted, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go." And now we have Obama. And now we have Janet Napolitano. And now we have the barbarians not at the gates, but inside the gates themselves. And what the barbarians inside the gates are trying to destroy was right there in front of my eyes. I thought of all the trial and error and research that went into making all of the great advances that Western civilization has given the world. And it made me again think about the barbarians at the gate who want to destroy all of this. It made me remember that because a single generation of weaklings and leftists had made us vulnerable to attack, and attacked the very core of our civilization, that all the towering achievements of the West could be destroyed by a bunch of fanatics whose mindset has not changed for 1,000 years. While your ancestors were building the world, the ancestors of these fanatics were sitting by their scimitars and seething, creating nothing but hatred. Hatred for women, hatred for civilization, hatred for science, hatred for liberty itself. And so as I listened to the incredible music played by these young people last night, surrounded by the great works of Rodin, I realized that the throwbacks blew up 1,500-year-old Buddhist statues in Afghanistan once they took over Afghanistan. And if the barbarians at the gate had their way, they'd smash the sculptures, they'd ban the music being played, they'd put the women in burqas, they'd burn the paintings on the walls by all of the great European masters. So as you see the images of the revolution in Egypt, try to understand that the people pushing this pandemonium are not trying to create a democracy. They're trying to destroy the civilization that we enjoy in this country. And now let's go back to Mozart's Eine kleine Nacht music and listen to the feminists in the background of your mind chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, Weston Sib has got to go. Then take a look at who we have in the White House. Take a look at who we have in Homeland Security. Take a look at who we have in the Defense Department. And you'll understand that they've actually won. Now, here's a story that is not directly related, but it's somewhat related to what I just said to you. I know you're caught off guard because it's not Democrats bad, Republicans good. And it's not so clearly just simply Obama bashing that you can follow the dots. You see, the difference between my show and others is that the other shows, the so-called conservative shows, are like a John Nagy painting. You have dots that you follow, and you paint in the dots. Number one, you paint in green. Number nine, you put in a yellow. Number eight, you put in a blue. Number 10, you go to another color and you put it in. And presto, you come up with a patriot, a painting called Patriotism. So if you want a John Nagy painting, you're listening to the wrong show. This is a sort of free-form radio show. And if you can figure out exactly where I'm going to go, you're better off than I am, because, frankly, this is one from the heart, as we used to say back in the old days. Here's a story out of Ontario that will kind of bring all of this down home. A Superior Court rules the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal hearing was unfair. Well, that's just the beginning of it. Here's the story. A black lady in Ontario had a Muslim maid working for her. The black lady, Maxine Telfer, was brought before the Human Rights Tribunal in Canada, who wanted to take away her house because she said that her Muslim maid's food smelled badly. They found her to be a racist. They brought the black woman before a human rights group of kangaroo monsters in Canada. The court said that, yes, you were a racist. We're taking away your house to pay the employee. And that's the end of the story. Now, the woman who lodged a complaint against this black woman, the Muslim, Seema Saidi, told the tribunal in Canada she felt pressured to not wear her hijab. She also said her boss, the black lady, complained about the smell of food that she warmed in the microwave. The three-judge Superior Court panel in Canada ordered the Human Rights Tribunal to hold a hearing, and they fined the woman enough money to take her house away. That's what went on in Canada. Now, if you think that we're too far from that, you are mistaken. Now I'm going to do a jump cut to the Fort Hood massacre by the Muslim major Nidal Hassan. And I'm going to show you what has happened to our once great military under these Stepford wives who are running it, which goes back to George Bush, who has done nothing but persecute our troops rather than support our troops, in my humble opinion. So let's go to michaelsavage.com from Mozart, and we will go down on the left side, and we come to an article, if I can find it. Here, Los Angeles Times. Political correctness prevented action on Major Nidal Hassan. Now, 2 years before he went on a rampage, the Muslim major, and killed 13 people and injured over 30, wounded 32 at Fort Hood, he had said he's not loyal to the U.S. Constitution. He believes in the Quran. The FBI knew this. The Pentagon knew this, but they wouldn't do anything about it. Why would they do nothing to Major Nidal Hassan? Why did they not fire him back when they knew he was a lunatic, fanatic, radical Muslim? Answer, because they were afraid of being accused of being racist. Hassan, remember, was a 41-year-old U.S.-born Muslim of Palestinian descent who worked as an army psychiatrist. He yelled, Allahu Akbar, Arabic for God is great, when he ran into the Soldier Readiness Center and opened fire, killing 13 and wounding 32 who were unarmed. Senate launches a committee hearing into this man, and they say, how could this have happened? Why is it not happening? Along the way, the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the Pentagon all fought with the senators for the last year. They would not provide documents that shed light on Hassan's past and what they knew about him. At one point, the committee threatened subpoenas. So Joseph Lieberman doggedly kept it up, and he found out the following. They found, quote, systemic failures in the government's handling of the Hassan case. Well, that's double talk for what really happened. The double talk is that the workers in the field in the FBI were saying, arrest him, stop him, don't let him stay in there, because his radicalization was on full display to anybody who saw what this man was doing. Everybody knew the man was a fanatic Muslim, a lunatic, but there was no action taken to discipline or discharge him. But also, it gets worse. His officer evaluation report sanitized his obsession with violent Islamist extremism and turned it into praiseworthy research on counterterrorism. An FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force learned of his radicalization, this is all before he killed, and passed it on to another FBI task force. But the next inquiry failed to identify the totality of Hassan's doings and what he was going to do. He was communicating with a known terrorist, Avalaki. Still, the U.S. military would not arrest him. Still, the head of the army said, we won't even talk about Muslim. Still, after it happened, after the murder happened, our defense secretary, when asked about him screaming, Allahu Akbar, is it about an act of terror? Our own director of the military had the nerve to say, I won't even go there. I won't even go there? I'm going to tell you right now, the head of the FBI and the head of the U.S. Army and the head of the Pentagon should have all been fired long before this report came out, because they killed the 13. They wounded the 32 at Fort Hood. You say, well, what's the point of screaming about this? The country is so crippled by fear, so crippled by the leftists who have strangled them with their rules of racism and homophobia and this phobia and that phobia, that the only people they persecute are the patriots themselves. So that's why I say to you, last night as I stood in the museum drinking my cheap red wine and watching the old white people devour the buffet as though they had been starving, who didn't even listen to the great music, didn't even look at a Rodin sculpture, they didn't even look at where they were. All they saw was free quiche and free meatballs. And I said, take a look around, Michael, there's Western civilization for you. The older people don't even know that they have a civilization. All they do is follow their nose to the free meatballs. And there we have the barbarians at the gates being protected by Gates himself. I'll be right back.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill.
All right, it always fails. Whenever I do the highbrow stuff, the audience goes, this changes the channel. There's nothing I could do about it. That's why Western civilization is doomed. From Mozart to Motown in one generation, and now we have Gates in the White House protecting the Gates in the Defense Department. Defending the barbarians at the gates. FBI? The FBI? Are you ready to hear what the FBI did to not stop Hassan from killing at Fort Hood? Listen to this. The Hassan emails to a known terrorist, Awlaki, known to preach violence and encouraging others to kill for al-Qaeda, should have immediately been seen as a shocking course of conduct for a U.S. military officer. Instead, the FBI read his evaluation report and came to the conclusion that Hassan was only doing research. The FBI further said the evidence against Hassan at that time was very slim, and so FBI agents, so-called, quote, dropped the matter rather than cause a bureaucratic confrontation, the report said. Other FBI officials, so-called, in Washington, in addition to studying affirmative action manuals and EEOC rules and seeing what their pensions were worth, never acted on the evidence. As a result, the FBI threw the inquiry into Hassan into the garbage. He then went wild. Brought a gun into a room with unarmed soldiers and shot and killed 13 and wounded 31. Now, what are we going to do about it? Answer, nothing. The fact is the Fort Hood terror massacre was the worst Islamic terrorist attack on U.S. soil since 9/11. And the ability of this slithering snake to stay in the military after he expressed his radical Muslim hatred, he was still allowed to remain a major, is proof why we need Congressman King's and congressional hearings to investigate the radicalization of American Muslims as it relates to American homegrown Islamic terrorism, even inside our own institutions, like the Army, like the FBI. Remember, radical Islamic front groups like Saudi-funded pro-Hamas pressure group CAIR are trying very hard to have Rep. King's investigation watered down to include neo-Nazi and KKK groups that were long ago neutralized by the United States government. Make no mistake about it, these Muslim front groups are paving the way for Sharia law in the U.S. and the entire Western world. Most so-called civil rights groups of this nature have their roots in the Muslim Brotherhood. Clearly, in their memorandum on the general strategic goal for the Brotherhood in North America, here's what they say. Their work in America is a kind of grand jihad to eliminate and destroy Western civilization from within and, quote, sabotage its miserable house so that it is eliminated and Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions, close quote. So that's why when I went to a museum last night and I saw these young ladies playing the violins and the viola and I stood around Rodin's statues and I saw old white people who were all liberals in San Francisco didn't even know what was going on around themselves. And then I look at the sad state of our military leadership, the sad state of the FBI, what it was once a great institution. I felt protected in this country. I now feel hunted in this country. I feel everything is upside down. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's a government that has turned on the patriots, a government that is protecting the barbarians. Do we have a sleeper in the White House? It doesn't matter whether we do or not. It doesn't matter whether he is or he isn't. He may as well be a front man for them, for the way he's behaving. Do you understand it doesn't matter at the end of the day whether he isn't or he is?
Savage.
Boom, boom, boom.
Alright, now we're back to the John Nagy show. The show you've all come to love. Paint by numbers, a two-dimensional radio show. Play some rock and roll, get out the blackboard. Just draw the U.S. Constitution on it. Paint, wrap myself in a flag and poof. There you have an instant Fox, a TV show. And there's no subtlety permitted. No subtlety whatsoever. You go to take a look at what the news is reporting. CNN has fallen to the lowest level. We all knew what it was. Okay, so what's the view of bashing them? But the lowest level was hit during the Egypt riots when one of their stars, who has no audience whatsoever, Anderson Blooper, had his hair tussled in the streets of Cairo and went on about it for 8 hours. They kept replaying the tape, how his hair was tussled. And now he's hiding in a hotel room on Facebook looking for the man who tussled his hair, apparently, to have it done again. But if you go to the CNN website, this is a headline, latest news, Miley Cyrus gets tattoo number 5. I'm not making this up. I swear to God. Miley Cyrus gets tattoo number 5. This is equal to the new imam quits New York City Islamic Center. You hear about that one? They can't seem to find one Muslim imam who doesn't divulge his real beliefs. They marched him out. The first one they had to get rid of, he became a liability. So they hire another imam. The next thing that comes out of his mouth is homosexuality is caused by child abuse. So they moved him off the. So, oh, no, we don't, no, that's not Islam. No. He's gonna put him back where he can. We're going to find yet another imam. They got another one. God knows what the next one will say. His resignation comes on the heels of a controversial post on his website in which he claimed that, quote, an enormously overwhelming percentage of people struggle with homosexual feeling because of some form of violent, emotional, or sexual abuse at some point in their life, close quote. So they threw him off the job because apparently he insulted homosexuals in New York City, so they can't cover that part of Sharia law up. They got rid of the first imam, now they got the second. They have to find yet another one now to, we're in favor. Just don't worry about us. We're just like you. Yeah, we have a swimming pool in here, and we're going to have a community center. Oh, yeah, bowling lanes. So Janet Napolitano can come on in with come from the lanes, coming out of the lanes there. We saw the shooting. We read about Fort Hood on the way out of the lanes out of there and the Chevy pickup. And well, we got the PR going on it, so we showed we were on top of it and in front of it. And no, we couldn't brush up against our community here in the DHS. We're not in charge of it. No, we passed it over to the Army, and they covered it pretty good. They said, what'd they say in the Army? Let's hear what he had to say after the shooting. Let's hear that one.
Based on the facts that you have now about Hassan and what happened that day, is it fair to characterize the shooting as a terrorist attack?
I'm just not going to go there.
That's our defense secretary. A reporter did ask at the time, was this a terrorist attack? The guy was wearing a white robe. The man jumped up and screamed, Allah Akbar. For 2 years, he said he doesn't respect the U.S. Constitution, only the Quran. And our defense secretary says, I'm not even going to go there. They're still investigating it. Incidentally, I want you to understand something. Lieutenant Behenna, who I have given money for his defense and raised money for, and you've given money, do you know that his mother sent me a letter which said that he is now virtually in a prison cell built during the Civil War? Do you know that her son has still not been indicted for this crime of the Fort Hood massacre? Are you aware that Obama has blocked his indictment while our war heroes are rotting in Civil War-era prisons? You don't know any of that. All that's important is that you don't know any of that. You know, two legs good, four legs bad. So listen to the schmucks in the media telling you that Mubarak is the worst dictator in the Middle East. The same brave men on Fox News who had nothing evil to say about Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, are all jumping on Mubarak. Why? Because that's what they were told to read. That's all. That's all. They don't know anything. They don't know any better. They're dummies. They're puppets. Okay, I made my point. I'm not going to blow a fuse. You know, night falls over Manhattan. Night falls over San Francisco. Night falls over all of us. And then life itself falls at the end. Where is it written on my birth certificate, I ask myself today. I woke up and I said, where is it written I have to save Western civilization? Where is it written that I have to get up every day and carry this world on my shoulders? So I went and got my birth certificate. It has my name, where I was born, and when I was born. It has my mother's name and my father's name. But it doesn't say, Michael, you shall save Western civilization. You shall be required unto the 70 to scream your heart out as you watch the world going up in flames with quislings at every level of the U.S. government. You don't have to do that. What the heck are you doing it for? Just play rock and roll and do a two-dimensional radio show. You'll make more money, like the rest of them. Just have them call up and say, you're a great American. Tell them, yes, I'm a great American. That's all. Then when someone calls up and says, ditto, say ditto to you. That's all. That's what they used to. They want a John Nagy radio show. Republicans, good. Republicans going to save America. It's those Dems that are no good. You got to vote for Republicans. Don't vote for them Dems. No good. Republicans, good. Dems, bad. It's astounding. I don't know if the audience has gotten dumber or I've gotten dumber, but something's wrong here. I have never seen anything like it. The callers are getting stupider by the day. The media has gotten dumber by the day. And so maybe I'm getting stupider by the day. Maybe we've all gotten dumber together under Obama. It's possible that Obama's lowered the native intelligence of the American people by around 15 points since he seized power and he took control of the media. Thomas in Portland, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, you're a go man, go Mike, go. You're on fire today. Listen, it's hard to be here. I want to make a serious comment because you keep cracking me up about going bowling with Janet Reno.
No, it wasn't about Janet Reno. That was a parody on, you know, just a general parody. I would never mock the Department of Homeland Security because their computers are so busy looking at the child pornography all day long. You know, once in a while they're liable to look up talk show hosts and see what they can nail us with.
Michael, listen, it's again a pleasure to talk with you, and not only you, also your audience. I've been a listener every day since 2001.
Hours
a day.
I don't think I was born in 2001.
You were in Portland, Oregon, 2001, and I've been with you every
no,
day.
No, I know. I was on in Oregon. Yeah, you lost your state years ago to the wonderful gals from San Francisco who fled San Francisco to infest Portland.
Listen, this is why I called. I have noticed a really increased intensity in you since the 1st of January. It's very noticeable.
Is it good or bad?
Mike, it's very good. I've been wowed, and you've really done a change. And, you know, it is really kind of a continued passion about you, and it goes way back. I've listened to you for, 9-10 years now, and
wow.
You have these keen insights that you get to really quick, like about 3 days before, you know, the you know, all the other media guys.
Oh, the Egypt thing? I saw what was going on. They're all following the government media complex talking points. Doesn't matter whether it's Fox or CNN, it's the same exact message. Mubarak bad, crowds, protesters who are good.
I was going to add the other thing, and that is your deep understanding of history. And
well, you can't have too much of that, because then you're thought of as an intellectual, which is anti-American.
Well, let's talk about something more fun. I really digged your opening rock and roll music today, the classical stuff, you know?
The Eine kleine Nacht music?
I know, I love it. Now, it's like, there's my...
Mama, did you get what I was talking about in the museum? How I stood there looking at these young ladies playing the violins and the viola, and I said, my God, what would the barbarians do to these women? How come the barbarians don't have women who play music like this? How come the barbarians have never produced sculpture of the type that Rodin produced? How come the barbarians have produced nothing in 1,000 years? And why is this country so sensitive to the barbarians' needs? I keep asking myself why. I don't get any answers. Like talking into a hollow cavern, a canyon. It's like yelling into a canyon, like, God! And nothing comes back but your own voice. You scream out for a government, and all that comes back is a hollow sound. You scream out, government, where are you? And nothing comes back. They're all studying EEOC booklets on how to sue somebody and also what their pensions are worth. If they're not persecuting active duty soldiers who do their job in Afghanistan. Because God forbid a soldier should actually shoot a terrorist, he's immediately suspect of being a Nazi. The only soldier that they seem to like are the victims who cry that they need psychiatric medication.
Damn it.
And don't get me started here. Anything else? Any other requests? Let me go back to something you said that intrigued me. Something that January 1st, my intensity increased. When I came back on the air January 3rd, you felt an increased intensity?
You know, you were vacationing for a week or two, and something changed.
Today, as though it's the most important day of my life.
Michael, you know, what I mean is, you know, we as listeners perceive you've been gone on vacation, but you came back, you know, even more impassioned.
That's right. That which does not kill you makes you stronger, as they say.
Let's talk about a movie instead. I got a great movie for you.
Let's change it. I agree with you. Have you seen a great movie?
I bought 10 copies of this movie. I'm going to give them to my friends. It's a movie called Proof. Have you heard of it?
No. Tell us about it.
It's my favorite all-time movie. And
who's in it? Who's the star?
I forget. He's an Australian actor, I think. But anyway, it's about a...
Not the lady Australian actor who I'm crazy about. What's her name?
Maybe I forget the guy's name. I'm like you. I can't remember
her
name.
There's one woman actor who I really think is so unbelievable. Every movie she's in, she's incredible. And I don't remember her name even. She's got, like, her teeth always show in the front. And not Naomi Campbell. I don't know what her name is. I don't remember their names. There's something about certain actors. But they're actors, that's all. Well, anyway, what's Proof about in a nutshell?
Well, it's about a totally blind guy. You know, it's like our old buddy Vincent. And this guy can't see a friggin' thing. And he goes downtown and he buys a camera. And he walks around for two or three days taking pictures. And you got to ask yourself, you know, what can a blind guy take pictures of? You can't even see what he's looking at.
Right, and what's the theme? What happens?
About a week later, he has to have a lady friend of his go through the pictures and describe to him, you know, what he thought he saw.
Yeah.
And one of them, you know, he says, describe it. And she says, well, there's a tree, and there's part of the sky. And he says, is that all? And she looks again, and she says, yes, that's all. And so he says, move on to the next picture. But in that one, you know, there was a squirrel at the ground. That's what he heard. He was photographing sound.
Ah.
About half of them, he actually caught, you know, his intended, you know, thing on the film.
So the theme of the story is how intense the senses are of a blind person.
Precisely. And he was trying to capture things. And the takeaway message from this whole movie is, you know, she says, well, why did you take these pictures? And it's a quote that stuck in my mind for 10 years. And it is this. It is said, I know that it's real because I have a picture of it. Or, you know, I know it existed because I photographed it.
Right, but I sort of get it. But I think that the secondary theme is that a blind person has super sensitivities in so many other areas, right?
Or a blind person is, you know, is not blind at all.
Ah, right.
I mean, very intriguing.
Well, my friend, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. The time, whether you know it or not, is 46 minutes and 28 seconds after the hour. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day.
So the traitorous president of the United States of America gave away United Kingdom nuclear secrets to Russia. But that doesn't matter to you. What's important is that he's the first black president and that he's a good liberal. And he means well, and he brought us hope and change. Little did you know what change meant. Change meant that he will give away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia without Britain's knowledge. It came out minutes ago, according to WikiLeaks cables, Obama agreed to give the Russians sensitive information on Britain's nuclear deterrent to persuade Russia to sign a key treaty, disclosed today by the Daily Telegraph. Doesn't matter to you, though. What's important is Charlie Sheen's bender. That's what's important, is how Charlie Sheen's enjoying himself and whether or not he's living free. What did he do? What did you say the sleeper did? Are you kidding me? Any other president in history would have been arrested for espionage if he did this. Did you hear what I just said? Obama should be arrested for espionage for giving away the United Kingdom's nuclear secrets to Russia against the UK's knowledge, by the way. I'm banned from entering Britain for things I allegedly said. He should be banned from entering Britain, and he should be tried for espionage. What am I talking about? What actually happened? You didn't read it in the Daily News? It can't be true? Well, would you want to hear it, or it's too much information for you for tonight? Your mind is on which goon is throwing which ball to what other goon on Sunday. You got your popcorn ready and your six-pack, that's all. You got your six-pack ready. Apparently, Russia wanted to know how many nuclear missiles the United Kingdom had. The United Kingdom wanted it just kept as a secret because they have such a small arsenal that they didn't want Russia to know exactly how many they had. So Obama did the best he could as a sleeper, and he said, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to tell you not only how many missiles they have, but we're going to give you the code numbers, okay, of every Trident missile that we give to Britain because we make them for them. We're going to hand over the serial numbers of Trident missiles that we transfer to Britain so you and Russia will know exactly how many missiles they have and where they are at any time. That's all. Now, if, let us say, a spy did this, he'd be arrested immediately for treason. Well, I shouldn't say that. Excuse me. Let's just say in my day, which was like 4 years ago. My day was 2 years ago. Remember, there's two Americas. It's B.O. and after O. America B.O. before Obama and after O. B.O. and A.O. Right now, it's like a different season in America. It's a season where treason is considered the norm. It's a season where double talk and deceit is considered the average conversation that's expected from the government media complex. Did you hear what I just said to you? According to WikiLeaks cables that just came out, the United States, meaning Obama, has agreed to give away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia without the UK even knowing it. Any other president, right away, there's an immediate tribunal. He's tried for treason. But I guess that doesn't matter to you, so we'll move on to Charlie Sheen's bender and what kind of fun he had and what kind of drugs he was using and how many Americans need medication at any one time in order to make them look at Charlie Sheen's bender video instead of looking at the treason in the White House. Did you hear what I just said to you? Well, you're going to expect Cameron in England is patriotic and proud enough to retaliate for what Obama did to him? You're kidding me. Obama sold America out and the Brits as well? No, not possible. After all, he is the first fair progressive president the world has ever had. Remember what he did the first day he was in office. He took down the statue of Winston Churchill and gave it back to Britain. I'm surprised he didn't put up a picture of who should he have put up? Well, he's not ready yet. Him and Michelle have not been able to really show their true selves. They did take out the statue of the great Winston Churchill, but they didn't actually put one up of Karl Marx yet. So he lied to France, he lied to England, and he gave away UK nuclear secrets to Russia. Well, as I say, I believe that there should be a trial. I believe Obama should be tried for treason for this. But you don't believe that. The U.S. spied on the British Foreign Office. The U.S. gave away the codes to Trident missiles to Russia. Washington lobbied London in 2009 for permission to supply Moscow with detailed data about the performance of U.K. missiles. Not only do they want to know how many they had, they want to know how the U.K. missiles were performing. So the United Kingdom, to its credit, refuses. So Obama goes behind the backs of the Brits and agrees to hand over the serial numbers of Trident missiles. It transfers to Britain. Professor Malcolm Chalmers says this appears to be significant because while the U.K. has announced how many missiles it possesses, there has been no way for the Russians to verify this. Over time, the unique identifiers given by Obama will provide them with another data point to gauge the size of the British arsenal. Jane's Weapons System says they want to find out whether Britain has more missiles than we say we have, and having the unique identifiers might help them. While the U.S. and Russia have long permitted inspections of each other's nuclear weapons, Britain has sought to maintain some secrecy to compensate for the relatively small size of its arsenal. So now they have no privacy whatsoever. WikiLeaks has proven once again beyond a reasonable doubt that Obama is an absolute treasonous, backstabbing man who does not belong in the White House. He should be tried for treason immediately. We should apologize? This man is committing treason. In my opinion, he has committed treason. In my opinion, he should be tried for treason. But you know that I have no power whatsoever. I'm merely a talk show host. Who's going to listen to me anyway? What power do you really have? Who are you going to turn to? John Boehner? He'll put on another pink shirt and cry.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Too much for the average John Nagy listener. And we're going back to John Nagy Radio here on the Savage Nation, the paint-by-numbers show. So I'll make it simple for you. Came out today that the WikiLeaks cables, you know what they are, right? In between looking at and surfing for internet porn, you've heard something about WikiLeaks. It turns out that the Obama administration agreed to stab Britain in the back and give away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia in order to get Russia to sign the START Treaty, which I spent months bleeding on the radio, warning you the man was a traitor. He was selling us down the river. The START Treaty was one-sided. The START Treaty would cripple us. You didn't listen to me. True, a certain number of you bought the book and you talked about it, but most Americans went on with their daily lives, with their heads in the sand, or listening to what the morons in the media were feeding them. You wake up and you find out that the Obama administration gave away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia. They stabbed an ally in the back. We find out definitively that Obama stabbed Mubarak in the back. Remember, it took a long time to create the relationship with Mubarak and to create the stability in the Middle East that we have. As tenuous as it is, its stability, or it was, until this meddling communist in the White House took control of this country and has done everything he can, as fast as he can, to run this country off the rails and turn it into a third-rate nation. And, you know, I want to say something. We've been talking about the hearings today on the Nadal Hassan case, the Fort Hood massacre, where for years before he went off with the gun, for years before the Muslim major screamed Allah Akbar and shot, killed 13 and wounded 32, for years before he did it, he was saying, I don't believe in the U.S. Constitution. I believe in the Quran. I'm communicating with open terrorists. The FBI was afraid to do anything. The Army did nothing. Why? Well, they said he was a ticking time bomb. And today, Lieberman said that he was a ticking time bomb. Listen to clip 7, what Lieberman said.
Hassan's words made him not just a ticking time bomb, but a traitor. We must take
right strong... Am I going too far to say that Obama's actions show him to be a ticking time bomb? I'm telling you, I don't know what to say anymore. Each day astonishes me what he gets away with, not what he does. I am not surprised by what Obama does. Obama is the destroyer, as I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty. He has taken a fine nation, he's taken it apart like a fine watch. It'll never be put back together again. Each day he takes another spring out of the watch that was carefully crafted, carefully assembled, put into this watch called America. Each day he takes the watch apart with his dim-witted friends, these college communists who have never created a job in their lives. He is destroying the greatest country on earth. He is not loyal to Egypt? Of course not. He engineered it with Brzezinski because Soros wanted this done, to the best of my knowledge. I wrote a 13-page essay on it. It's on michaelsavage.com yesterday. I assembled what I think is the proof that Obama is behind the fall of Egypt and Tunisia and, God forbid, next Jordan. He absolutely engineered this. Did he think that it would cause Egypt to go up in flames? I don't think so. I think that the man is such a fool and such a deluded communist opportunist that he actually thought he could cause Mubarak to step aside in a parliamentary democracy to arise in an area that never heard of John Locke, doesn't know who Thomas Jefferson is, has no idea what democracy is. He thought somehow in his idealistic mind he could have some kind of putative, watered-down democracy in Egypt and the Middle East, and then eventually they could force the Israelis to give up half of Israel, and he could win a Nobel Prize from the communists in Sweden. Now we come to America. The news is quite simple. It's shocking, actually, any other president. If you were to look this in a historic context 100 years from now, if there's still a country and we still have freedom of the press, which is highly unlikely, it's going to take God himself to save this country from what this man and his minions are doing to us because we don't have a media to stop him. If we had a real media, every headline in this country would be Stop the Presses, and tonight it would be a late edition. President caught in treason. President caught red-handedly committing treason. That would be the headline, the screaming headline in the afternoon. Obama caught committing treason. Hearings called. No, nothing. The Rosenbergs did about the same thing as he did. Should Obama be arrested for espionage? Do you think Obama should be arrested for espionage and tried for espionage? It came out, by the way, this didn't come out by itself. They didn't tell us this. These are the WikiLeaks cables. U.S. agrees to tell Russia Britain's nuclear secrets, stabs England in the back, stabs Egypt in the back, stabs Israel in the back. The man has no loyalty to anything except his agenda. His agenda. His agenda. So I'm going to ask you a question. Are you, as a liberal, proud of your president? Are you proud of this man that you put in the White House, that he would stab our British partners in the back like this in order to appease Russia? Let's start with the callers. You know my opinion. I think that every newspaper in America should be screaming, President caught committing treason. Hearings to be called. But A, we have no press. B, we have no opposition party. So who's left to say this? A few websites and a few radio shows, that's all. Chicago, Ronnie, you're first up from WIND. Go ahead, please.
Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to save this presidency with a radio show. Even though... you know, I think you're giving it your best effort. You know, you're just screaming in the wind. So, you know, relax a little bit.
I know, but Obama sold the Brits out as well as the Egyptians and the Israelis. I mean, what's next?
I saw you got that from WikiLeaks. What I don't understand is when you ripped Assange, I mean, a while back, I mean, just as an aside, you really ripped Julian Assange.
I'm so glad that you pointed it out. I knew somebody would. I had him wrong. Because I thought Assange was leaking only information that would make the leftist agenda more prominent. And I thought it was very carefully orchestrated what they were leaking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so, like, in that kind of respect, I mean, you do sound kind of, it's kind of paranoia. You know, you sound paranoid.
But wait a minute. I'm paranoid for telling you what the WikiLeaks cables have just released?
No, I think that...
Obama stabbed Britain in the back, that makes me paranoid to report what they leaked out?
No, I think that you've got like 9 million things on your mind and you're just screaming in the wind. I think you need to come down on a concise plan of action.
Well, when was the last time you wrote a book where you were able to focus your mind? I mean, I've written a number of books. I would think now you could figure out that I'm capable of focusing on what I think is important.
What have your books changed?
Excuse me?
What have your books changed?
I would hope that my book, Trickle Up Poverty, which came out about a month before the election, helped throw 100 communist traitors out of office.
Look, you've been writing books for a long time, and you got this liberal president in there. It didn't change anything.
Well, it could be worse, couldn't it? We could have no president in there if it wasn't for me. You could look at it that way. If I wasn't sitting here like Paul Revere, we might have an outright communist dictatorship in the country by now, instead of a slow percolating communist dictatorship.
I think that you need to relax a little bit and.
Well, you mean like Charlie? You mean like Charlie Sheen relax?
No, I mean like
get 5 hookers and a carton of cocaine and a couple of bottles of vodka. That'd be very good for my mental status.
Now you've got to kind of rein it in, Mike. I mean, you're all over the place. You're very smart, but you are all over the place.
Well, I can't stick to one topic all day. I mean, I would get bored, wouldn't you?
But you're not going to be able to accomplish anything. I mean, what you do accomplish is you know, you get people interested in listening to your show. Your show is very entertaining, but you yourself, you're not accomplishing anything.
Well, maybe I should get a blackboard and get a pair of fake glasses and with a fake glass, and I could stand with a blackboard, and then I could focus on one topic a week.
He's not accomplishing anything either, you know.
So wait, who is accomplishing something?
Oh, I think the president is accomplishing things.
So you think that giving away Britain's nuclear secrets is an accomplishment he should be proud of?
You know what? I didn't read the WikiLeaks thing yet, so I'm not going to take your word for the content.
Well, wait a minute. Just said you're a man who can focus and I can't. I gave you the details, and yet you couldn't focus on the details. How does that figure?
Well, you're paranoid. That's why you scream and holler. Well,
all you're doing is categorizing your own fears and trying to marginalize me, but you're not succeeding. You yourself have shown yourself to be basically a man who's making stories up as you go along. You wouldn't even listen to what I said, and you said, I can't focus. I gave it to you, but you wouldn't focus. You're projecting your own paranoia.
No, I'm not. You're doing reverse psychology. You're paranoid, Mike, and that's why you scream and holler. You're paranoid about everything. You've got
So let's start again. I'll do it slowly enough so you can focus on it. Let's see how good you are, okay? You want to hear the story or you don't want to hear it?
But, no. I want to say something.
Okay, here it is. WikiLeaks cables. U.S. agrees to tell Russia Britain's nuclear secrets. The U.S. secretly agreed to give the Russians sensitive information on Britain's nuclear deterrent to persuade them to sign a key treaty. You're proud of that kind of deceit, are you?
Mike, I'm not. No, of course I'm not proud of that at all.
Well, what do you mean, of course? How would I know what you're proud of or not proud of? You're defending the president no matter what he does.
I didn't defend him no matter what he does. We've only talked about one thing. I didn't defend him no matter what.
Well, we're talking about him stabbing Britain in the back. We know he stabbed Egypt in the back. We know that he undermined Egypt with his so-called diplomacy and backing the so-called protesters. Can't you ever understand that this man is selling the United States down the river? And you call that paranoia because you yourself probably agree with him. You probably agree that the Marxist one-world government will be better for world peace.
No, I think that you're paranoid and that you're not focused. And I think that that's why...
Well, you keep repeating the big lie, but you're not going to succeed with me or my audience because they know better. So let me give you another quote to take home tonight. A great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within. Will Durant, he was a great historian. I would think you should focus instead on the traitor in the White House rather than on a radio host who has absolutely no power, no influence whatsoever.
Your audience is used to a diet of fear, and you're good at providing...
So now you're a judge now of everyone who listens. You're a judge of 8 million people. You know all of them, and you know just how they think. When did you become a psychologist and a media analyst? Do you have a degree in these fields, or is this an expertise that you know about that we should be aware of? You're an expert on 8 million listeners. You know exactly what they think?
Mike, you're an extreme paranoiac. And that's
but,
what people.
But I'm asking you again, where do you get your information from that you can categorize 8 million people?
Mike,
Ronnie, I know you're probably a part of the left-wing machine out of Chicago. I know you're listening from Chicago. You're no doubt one of these college operatives of Obama. You're probably paid by Obama. And you got to understand, Ronnie, you're showing yourself for what you are, not me. You're not going to change anyone's mind, Ronnie. All you're doing is showing that the Obama machine is now penetrating talk radio. You're now listening to the show. You're being paid by the Obama administration to try to undermine anybody who criticizes him. This is something that might work in the Philippines or in the Egypt. It's not going to work here, Ronnie.
Your paranoia made you draw all of those conclusions, though.
So, Ronnie, you keep giving a medical diagnosis. What's your actual field of expertise?
You are paranoid.
But Ronnie, how many times have you said the word paranoia? Is that something you read in college and you like the sound of the word?
Mike, I could out-debate you every day.
Well, no, you're not debating me. You keep repeating one word over and over again because you think it makes you sound smart. Ronnie, why don't you define the word paranoia?
Do you disagree that you're...
Ronnie, go ahead now. It's my show, not yours. You, Ronnie, remember? The court said you can't beat her up anymore. Smart Ronnie is defined paranoia.
Okay, first of all, it's my show when I'm on here. I'm a grown
man. It's your show? You want to talk about paranoia? You're a lunatic. It is never your show. You have no show. You have a telephone, that's all you have. And when I hang up on you, you're left staring at the wall, Ronnie. So now let's show your intelligence. Define paranoia, Ronnie. The world is listening.
I'm going to go to the gym and work out when we hang up. But
Ronnie, you don't even know what the word means, do you? You're an uneducated man. You heard the word back in the hippie day when you were smoking your weed, and you heard the word paranoia and you think it was cool, but you don't know what the word means, do you?
Your paranoia is...
Now, why don't you describe it? Describe it or I'm going to hang up on you because you're just a dummy. You're just another dummy who thinks you're smart. You have no audience, no listenership. You never wrote anything anyone ever read. So I'm giving you one last shot to show your intelligence. Define the word paranoia, Ronnie. You used it 10 times.
The Michael Savage Show.
Okay, take a walk, you dummy. You see, this is what Obama's doing now. He's having all of his left-wing minions call radio shows and call the host names. I'll be right back.
Beyond the sea, somewhere.
I want to explain how dangerous the times are in which we're living. We have a traitor for president. I knew he was an open Marxist, but there have been Marxists before who've risen to high places in America. They've never been president. As I proved in Trickle Up Poverty, I believe that from the time of his early education, he was trained to hate America, to be an internationalist, a globalist, however you want to put it. Never believed in American exceptionalism. He's a lifetime communist. It has now reached a point, though, when we read the latest WikiLeaks cable that was published just this afternoon. Obama stabbed Britain in the back. He gave away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia. So a caller calls in the last segment and says, I'm paranoid because I said that and that my show is built upon paranoia. He repeated it 10 times because it's a big word that makes him sound powerful. I asked him to define the word paranoia, the concept of what paranoia means. He didn't really know it. He kept going around it. But then he said something very telling. He said that paranoia is what defines my show, but he couldn't define it himself. And I asked him over and over again, define the word paranoia. Well, he couldn't define it over and over again. But I'm going to read you a definition, and I'm going to ask you whether it more clearly defines him or me. Paranoia often brings a person to the point of irrationality and delusion. Is it delusional of me to call Obama a traitor? Or is it delusional of him to cover up a traitorous president? Is it delusional of him to not comprehend that we're living through something we've never lived in this country before, which is a man in the White House who actually hates the country, who stabs Egypt in the back, stabs Britain in the back, stabs Israel in the back, and he's caught? And they call talk show host paranoia who know this.
Savage.
Well, love, love it, darling. Come and go with me. Don't let me way beyond the sea. I need you, darling. So come go with me.
So this news broke this afternoon, but I wouldn't expect you to pay any attention to it because your mind is on Charlie Sheen's Bender and Sunday's football game, which, of course, is more American than, well, than America itself. I mean, what could be more American than watching goons throw footballs at each other? WikiLeaks cables released today says that Obama gave away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia in order to get Russia to sign, part of what he gave away to get Russia to sign the START Treaty. Now, my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I spent a lot of pages on the START Treaty. I try to warn America. Only a couple of 100,000 of you bought the book. It's a shame that 10 million people didn't hear about it, but it wouldn't have mattered anyway. We have a quisling Republican Party that would have done nothing to stop it, so it really wouldn't have mattered. Fundamentally, we have a Democrat or Republican government. It's an oligarchy. The parties are just mere front groups for the oligarchy. And so once the oligarchy decided they wanted the START Treaty, it didn't matter which of the puppets in either of the parties said what. It would have happened anyway. So I read this. I'm shocked. I call the president a traitor. I say he committed treason. I ask for hearings. And one of his workers in Chicago, or one of his campaign workers, or someone who works for him in some other capacity, no doubt, calls up and starts calling me paranoid. And I ask him to define the word paranoia. And he keeps repeating the word paranoia, paranoia, you're paranoid. People listen to you, are paranoid, you live on paranoia. So I said, Ronnie, define paranoia. He won't do it. So I said, Ronnie, this is my show, not yours. And listen to what he says. He says to me, now listen, he says, when I call your show, it's my show. And I want to tell you something. That is a clear sign of paranoid thinking. That's called delusion. Ronnie was actually projecting his own paranoia by declaring the reality of what I was saying was delusional. He was delusional in thinking that when he called the radio show, it was his radio show. And so, therefore, we're living in very dangerous times when workers for a government like Ronnie will call anybody who calls them out for what they are by medical terminology, because this went on in the Soviet Union. What happens next is Obama puts together a panel and declares that anyone in the media who criticizes him in any manner that's not acceptable to him and his left-wing psychiatric minions is mentally deranged, such as paranoid, and they need treatment. They're immediately arrested and put into a gulag where they're given treatment by the U.S. government psychiatrist, the same type that Nidal Hassan was. Remember, Nidal Hassan was a U.S. government psychiatrist. For 2 years, Nidal Hassan was screaming, Allah Akbar. He was writing, Allah is great, on medical reports in the army. He was communicating with a known terrorist. The army passed the buck. The FBI wouldn't arrest him. Nobody did anything for fear of being called committing some kind of, prejudice. Consequently, he goes off and puts on the white robes and shoots, kills 13 and wounds 32 people. And then the defense secretary says that he won't even talk about the fact that it was a terrorist act. It was the single largest terrorist act since 9/11, yet no one has gone to jail for having let Nidal Hassan be a ticking time bomb. I then made a comparison afterwards, and I said, wait a minute. If I look at what Obama's done since he came to office, he took out Winston Churchill's bust. He didn't exactly yet put in a portrait or a bust of Karl Marx or Lenin, but he may as well have done so because he's practicing their preachings in modern form, according to my analysis. I'm telling you that Obama's a ticking time bomb. Every day that goes by, we see the damage the man is doing. He's destroying this country. He is destroying everything that is good about the country. He has done nothing that is positive for the country. But what good is it if we don't have a fifth, if we don't have a press, when the fourth estate becomes the fifth column, as I've said over and over again, but that requires some historical knowledge, which apparently Ronnie doesn't have. When the fourth estate has become the fifth column, and when the opposition party, meaning the Republicans, are really one and the same with the Democrats, tell me what's left in the country. Well, you have a few websites that'll report the truth. You have some talk shows that report the truth. But what power do we really have? Now, it is true we had some impact. 100 communists got thrown out in the last election. How many of them will turn out to be replaced by anything other than replacement? Half communists is another story. Many of you celebrated when Scott Brown of Massachusetts, a Republican so-called, took over Kennedy's seat. You were screaming. He was the great white hope. Hey, Scott Brown was going to be the next president. Many of you jumped for joy. All you dittos, all you ditto heads. Hey, Scott Brown, next hero. I thought about it for 2 days, and I said, wait a minute, he's been in the assembly there, or the state of Massachusetts, for about 13 years. I said, he's just another you know, politician from Massachusetts. He can't be really anyone you can rely upon. I watched another Showtime program, Brotherhood, long enough to know that it's all horse trading. They have no faith, no belief in a country. Most of them don't care about anything but staying in power and doing deals. That's all. Sure enough, who was right? Me? I was paranoid in thinking that about Scott Brown, or was I correct? When have I ever been wrong? Tell me when I've been wrong in the last 10 years on this show. And I hadn't admitted, by the way. Everyone makes mistakes. I made one or two mistakes over 10 years. I've almost never been wrong. Never. And when I am found to be wrong, I usually admit it immediately. So my allegation today is that this revelation about Obama should trigger immediate hearings into the treason of Obama. He's a traitor. He stabbed Britain in the back. He gave away their nuclear secrets. The U.S. agreed to hand over the serial numbers of Trident missiles that it gives to Britain, while the U.K. had said, no, don't do it. We're not giving it to Moscow. We want to retain some of our secrets so that they don't know exactly how many missiles we have. The U.S., meaning Obama, goes behind the U.K.'s back and gives away the serial numbers of Trident missiles it transfers to Britain. Now, in the 1950s, there were spies named the Rosenbergs. They gave away nuclear information that was more significant than this in one regard to Russia. They were tried and found guilty of treason, by the way, because they shared information about our nuclear secrets with Russia. They were found to be traitors, the Rosenbergs. Let me ask you something. You give away the serial numbers of Trident missiles transferred to Britain? This is about as top secret as it gets. That's not treason. Why? Because a president did it? So let's now put this in context. Are you saying it's impossible for a president to be a traitor? I would disagree with you. A president is just a man. A president could be anyone, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation. A president could be a hero. A president could be a villain. A president could be loyal. A president could be disloyal. A president could be ordinary. In other words, a president could be like you and I. It could be anything. We don't know what they are till they actually get into office. But when you study the body of their work after a period of 2 years, and you see that he's taken a capitalist system and he's made it half socialist, seized General Motors, turned it into Government Motors, took a private health care system and turned it into a socialized health care system, stole money on the start and gave it away to his cronies. No one even knows where hundreds of billions of that money went. Him and Pelosi basically raped the Treasury for 2 years straight. And now you wake up and you find out that the man gave away British nuclear secrets to Russia in order to get Russia to sign a START treaty, which, by the way, only Russia wanted signed. It was not in our interest to sign the START treaty. If you actually want to spend the time reading about it, you can read about it in Trickle Up Poverty, a whole chapter on it. But I don't think many of you really want to read it. I think your minds are so dulled, you just want to come to a conclusion in advance. I'd like to know if you agree with me that what appears to be true in this leaked cable by WikiLeaks, that Obama has committed treason. Yes or no? Ernest in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, yeah, I believe he's definitely a traitor. For what he did, for what he has done, it's absolutely appalling. I fear for my country with this man in office.
Well, all right, so there's one vote, yes, he's a traitor. Chicago, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, hey, what's the chance that Julian Assange was listening to you? You were speaking out that he needs to release stuff from both sides. Maybe he's hearing you. Why don't you work on that?
I will believe that someone working for the Assange group cares about the truth when they release the British cables which show the conspiracy to ban Michael Savage from entering Britain. Now, you could say I'm making this up. We actually have some of those leaked documents in my book, Banned in Britain, which I published years ago. Gordon Brown, the traitor, the treasonous Gordon Brown, who conspired with Libya for oil contracts to release the Lockerbie bomber. Gordon Brown should be tried for treason, by the way. Gordon Brown, that double-talking liar, is a man who wanted me put on this list. It came out in those leaked cables years ago, but they were not leaked by WikiLeaks. How is it possible that if such transmissions occurred, not one of these cables about the only member of the American media banned from entering Britain have been released yet by Julian Assange, I keep asking? How is it possible since they exist?
Well, maybe he'll start listening to you.
I don't know. I don't know where he is or who he is. I've had about four different people with tremendous research abilities to start researching the WikiLeaks cables. There's no reference yet to Michael Savage in any of them. You say, well, why should there be? You're not that important. Well, I am that important. if the only member of the American media who was banned from entering Britain was banned because the Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, the traitor, wanted it done, as we discovered in our discovery, he wanted it done. He wanted me on the list in order to, quote, balance the list. He wanted an American white conservative put on the list because he didn't want it to look like he was just going after radical Muslims. That's why they put me on that list. So Julian Assange, if they are listening, if they want to win over millions and millions of people in the middle who don't really believe he's doing something other than for his own agenda and the agenda of the radical left, although today's release about Obama is quite illuminating for me. It means something has changed inside Julian Assange. This could be his attempt to cover himself from an attack on the right. It could be that he's so alienated the conservative movement in the world, and there's a big one, by the way, not only in this country but around the world. We all know that we're fighting for our survival. We all know that we're fighting for our nation's very survival because of the danger we're in, because of the traitors who are running our Western nations. Without exception, the entire West has been seized by radical international socialists. And yet the people themselves are moderately conservative, if not outright conservative. And they see WikiLeaks, one cable after the other, seems to promote the leftist agenda. There's almost nothing that embarrasses anyone on the left until today, the blockbuster. The blockbuster that Obama committed treason, in essence, by giving away the code numbers of Trident missiles that we provide Britain to Russia without Britain's knowledge. Britain didn't want this done. Britain refused to turn this information over to Russia. But Obama did it behind his back, behind Britain's back. That's called treason. So it could be that WikiLeaks has decided to appease the right wing around the world in order to avoid, let us say, having the entire world against them. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I think I'm gonna cry.
See, there's an opposite state of mind to paranoia. It's known as pronoia. And it could be that Obama suffers from pronoia. Pronoia is described as a philosophy that the world is set up to secretly benefit people, that the whole world is actually behind you. I would think that Obama actually thinks that the whole world is behind him, that the only people who oppose him are Neanderthal knuckle-draggers, meaning about 80% of the American people, who have to be eliminated one way or the other. Eliminated politically, of course. We don't mean anything else. We don't want to be too paranoid. After all, even though Bill Ayers and his friends said that they should kill 30 million people to bring about the cultural revolution that Mao Zedong brought up, we don't want to repeat any of that because it may alarm people. So therefore, 80% of the American people, although they're not behind Obama, I mean 80% of the thinking American people, I don't mean the majority of people who have pensions tied into the Obama administration, nor the children, nor the illegal aliens. We have to eliminate, let's say there's 350 million people in America. So take out the children. That would be anyone up to the age of 28, since they're now considered children under Obama, right? They're all under Obamacare. That's considered a child, so they can stay home and smoke medical marijuana. The boys can wear hair nets at home in their mother's bathrobes until they're 28, till they get there, till they find themselves, according to Nancy Pelosi. They're going to do something useful, like get a government job. So if you eliminate everyone in America under the age of 28 from the quotient that I'm trying to derive, that would be, I don't know, what, 150 million people immediately from the three, maybe 200 million would be eliminated by age. So that leaves 150 million people are left. But if you consider that out of the people in the age bracket, 21 to 28, most of them voted for Obama since they were brain-addled, particularly those who stay home with their mother and wear their hair nets, I would say that of the people that are left, of the 150 million people who are left, about probably 120 million of them at least would have voted against Obama because they know who he is. They could see through the fog put out by the machine. So that's about 65 to 80% of the American people who actually have brains and are not dependent on the government know that Obama is a traitor and he's anti-American. So if you eliminate them, you can then walk around in this delusional reality that everyone is behind you. Everyone is in love with you. Everyone is in a rave with you. It's sort of like the Zippies in the rave in Egypt. The Zippies just had a rave in the streets of Egypt. They got their, I don't know what they were on, but they were on something. They all assumed that the designer drug called freedom would liberate them and give them a euphoria once evil Mubarak was gone the designer drug of freedom would take over, and the intense light show of Cairo, the intense light show of the fires they had started, the techno music of the machine guns combined with the light show of the fires would give the Zippies intense positive social feelings from the rave they've committed in Egypt. And then suddenly they'd have a new religion, a quasi-religious cultural movement that would improve all of Egyptian mankind. That's until the Muslim Brotherhood took over. Then, of course, girls in dungarees would be whatever they do to them, etc. We don't have to go down the list. Everyone knows what they do to them. 1-800-449-8255. Raise high the roof beam carpenters. Long before the term pronoia was coined, J.D. Salinger referred to the concept in the novella Raise High the Roof Beam Carpenters. He wrote, way back then, Salinger wrote, I'm a kind of paranoiac in reverse, he wrote. I suspect people are plotting to make me happy. What a genius. Remember him? Remember Salinger? One of the American greats? Harrisburg, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you are the most mentally tough person in the country. There's no doubt about that.
Well, secret deal. U.S. agrees to tell Russia U.K.'s nuke secrets. It's all over the Drudge Report. It's from WikiLeaks. This proves that Obama is absolutely committing treason, in my opinion.
Let me just say this. You are so mentally tough. I think it strives from the fact that in your great book that should be mandatory reading, The Enemy Within, as a grammar school kid, most people would be locked for a loop the rest of their life if the teacher actually fraudulently took the election away from them, not once.
You remember the fifth grade. I remember I won the election. She said the election is null and void. He can't win.
But that's incredible. Do you realize how many kids could never recover from that?
What, you mean my self-esteem was permanently damaged because Mrs. Drazen said he can't win, we don't want Michael to be president? I remember they had a vote. I won. She said, no, we have to have a new election because I don't want him to be president.
What a great book. And going downstairs.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I don't. I took it. I didn't think it was fair, but it's like bowling and, you know, and getting like a 220 and the other kid gets 150 and then they say he won. It's the same kind of thing.
It is. And the other thing, if you're bringing it up to today, you're going to take all kinds of barbs from this because the mainstream media had to know. Somebody had to know this. It had to be leaked to them.
That Obama sold out Britain and gave away the serial numbers of Trident missiles? How are they going to spin that one? Tell me how these foul-mouthed lunatics on the left are going to spin that one. What, are they going to talk about being tussled in Cairo? They're going to talk about the rough trade that pushed them around in Cairo?
Unbelievable. You be careful because these characters...
Well, I'm very careful. I'm very careful. I've been very careful for 16 years. Of course, we've never had a government like this before. We've never had so many quislings who hate America before. We've never had a Secret Service that's so given over to hating the American people before. We've never had an FBI that is so given over to radical Islam that they suspect people who are patriotic before they suspect Major Nidal Hassan. No, we never had a situation like this before. I understand all of that.
I know your passion, and it's incredible, and you're a true...
What can I do? I mean, you know, to me, this is prima facie evidence of a Rosenberg moment in America. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg live. They've come back from the grave. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg could not have done a bigger act of treason than Obama committed. He gave away the codes, the serial numbers of Trident missiles to Britain against Britain's knowledge. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg live.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. gotten this email from a friend in the media, a major league player. Obama has lost 7 points in the Gallup poll since Egypt. This is very encouraging in that the media is so carefully controlled and so on message with Obama, both Fox and CNN becoming one, all calling for the head of Mubarak, our friend for 31 years, that I started to think maybe I was the only one seeing reality here, that the radical communist left under Obama has overthrown Mubarak, blaming Israel, all because Soros has pulled their strings. Well, apparently the American people are not that stupid. Apparently the American people are not as stupid as I started to think they were. 7 points. It should have been 70 points, not 7 points. I never saw anything like this. The fact of the matter is, we may, you know, people say, is he a sleeper president? What does that mean? He's overtly on the side of Islam, and you say, well, that's not bad. Oh, no. Heavy news. Secret deal. U.S. agrees to tell Russia U.K.'s nuke secrets. You hear this? This is what this man did behind the scenes. I mean, there's so many words that I have in my head right now. They're exploding in my head to tell you we have been taken over. It's beyond comprehension. I seem to be the only one in the media seeing it. But, you know, I looked at my birth certificate this morning before coming on the air, way this morning, and I said, you know, nowhere on the birth certificate does it say, you, Michael Savage, have been born to save Western civilization. You shall struggle until your last days and your last breath to save Western civilization. I didn't see that on my birth certificate. It's very interesting to me. Huh. So why am I doing it? Well, call it a habit, you know. Just call it a habit. This immigrant son loves America. And I guess I'm loyal to the country, unlike our president, who seems to be loyal to only one thing, and that's his pan-Leninism. You know, last night, I went to an exhibit at a great art museum here in San Francisco. It was an evening exhibit for a donor's cocktail party. The crowd broke in as though they were the starving masses. I never saw anything like it. For allegedly wealthy white people, you would think that it was the day of the locusts. They devoured the smorgasbord. And what was more embarrassing was the fact that it was in the Rodin Gallery of the Palace of the Legion of Honor. So here we are standing around some of the greatest art of Western civilization, and they're knocking down the meatballs, and they're knocking down the quiche, and they're drinking the bad wine. But worse yet was there was a quartet of young people, three violins and a viola. They were playing music such as Ein kleine Nacht music by Mozart. I was so moved by the young people's artistry and the magic of the music in this incredible hall. I mean, if I told you I was moved by it, it doesn't mean anything. All I can tell you is I was moved by it. But what was astonishing was I was the only one standing there next to them listening to the music. I saw these old white people around me, like locusts, going for the Swedish meatballs and the cheap wine and the quiche Lorraine, going around and around and around like locusts. They just like they had never eaten in their life. And it seemed nobody was listening to the music. Nobody saw the artistry of these young people. So I said, you know what, just enjoy it for yourself. But I'm standing there listening to Ein kleine Nacht music, Western music. I'm standing there looking at great works of art by Rodin, including this incredible bronze of St. John the Baptist. And all I could think of was the barbarians. All I can think of what went into creating the culture of Europe and America and the entire West. And all I could think of was the barbarians in the Middle East. The barbarians who would break the statues. The barbarians who would take these young ladies playing the violin and put them in burkas. And I looked around at the white people and I said, they don't even know what's going on around them. They haven't any idea. They don't understand what's going on around them. I see the throwbacks in the Middle East. As I watched the young people, and I stood there around the great works of art, I realized the throwbacks blew up 1,500-year-old Buddhist statues in Afghanistan after the barbarians took over Afghanistan. And if the barbarians at the gate had their way, they'd smash the sculptures by Rodin. They'd ban the music being played. They'd burn the paintings on the walls by all the great European masters. And the left wing would cheer. Remember how this all started? Remember the feminist movement? I do. Down with the patriarchy, said the feminists. Down with the patriarchy, said the feminists. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Weston Siv has got to go. And you wake up and there they are. Janet Napolitano, Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization surely had to go. This is the Savage Nation. Why do I do it? Because I do it. This just in, WikiLeaks cables say that the United States under Barack Hussein Obama agrees to give away Britain's nuclear secrets to Russia. The U.S. secretly agreed to give the Russians sensitive information on Britain's nuclear deterrent to persuade Russia to sign a key treaty, the Daily Telegraph can disclose. Under a nuclear deal with Russia, the U.S. has agreed to give the Kremlin the serial numbers of the missiles it gives Britain. I don't understand. If you don't see this as a traitor, I'd like to know who does. Why is there no investigation of Obama? It's unbelievable to me. What else did we learn? America spied on foreign office ministers by gathering gossip on their private lives and professional relationships. David Milbrand disowned the Duchess of York by saying she could not be controlled. That means nothing to me. I don't want to read the rest of this trash about the fallen Britain. All I know is that we have a president who doesn't even know what loyalty means. What does Professor Malcolm Chalmers say about this? What does it mean to you? He says this appears to be significant. Because while the United Kingdom has announced how many missiles it possesses, there has been no way for the Russians to verify this. Over time, the unique identifiers will provide them with another data point to gauge the size of the British arsenal. So Obama has now stabbed Britain in the back. If you think it started with Egypt, you're wrong. He stabbed everyone in the back except the communist Chinese and the communist Russians. And, of course, the Islamists. So who's his puppet master? Who is his puppet master? Well, we'll soon find out, I guess. Just keep tuned in on the keep listening to the Savage Nation. Every day it gets worse. And what's on michaelsavage.com? Well, I wrote a 13-page article yesterday, Obama and the Shadow Socialist Group Behind Egypt's Fall. Don't read it. How about Iran's Khamenei calls for Islamic regime in Egypt? Didn't hear about that on CNN or Fox News? Didn't make it to old Fox News? Oh, no, it's all about evil, 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 the evil dictator. The evil dictator. Evil dictator. Oh, one other little footnote. Very important one. Want to hear that one? Are you ready for this one? Did it get up on my site, michaelsavage.com? Did you know that the Napolitano and Muslim Brotherhood affiliates met secretly? Really? Didn't know that. Well, it can't be true. It wasn't in my local paper. I didn't read it in my local paper. It can't be true. It's right-wing stuff. It's right-wing. It's right-wing. And, how about McCain? After his fake move to the right, left-wing McCain is back. He's much happier this year being himself. Okay? The Manchurian candidate of his time is back again. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Human Rights Tribunal ordered employer's house seized after she said Muslim's lunch smelled bad. That's in Canada. A Human Rights Tribunal ordered that an employer's house be seized after she said her Muslim employee's lunch smelled bad. Her house was seized because of racism. There's your country at work. That's the Canada, you know. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
We're talking about an analysis of the domino effect, Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan, Yemen, who is behind it. I have pointed out some of the players. All of the roads lead right back to Obama and Hillary Clinton. The CIA is the big loser here, and as is Mossad. The venerable Mossad caught flat-footed. The CIA has proven to be nothing but a bureaucracy that exists simply for its own sake. They did nothing to predict this nor prevent this. In fact, a report just came out. We have a CIA appointee, or a would-be appointee, named, what's her name? We have warned of instability, she said. President Obama got an Egypt warning in 2010, CIA official says. Rubbish. Total rubbish. Total and absolute rubbish. The fact of the matter is, Miss O'Sullivan is another bureaucrat, another useless bureaucrat, another useless bureaucrat being put in by Dianne Feinstein and Wyden of Oregon, another college girl who's going to be put into the CIA, lorded over everybody, and be absolutely incapable of defending us as to what is coming tomorrow. The beginning of the O'Sullivan confirmation hearing, Intelligence Committee Chairman Dianne Feinstein, D. California, expressed a concern over the quality of information that was provided to top U.S. policymakers. No kidding. No kidding. It's a bureaucracy that failed us once again. We have the Department of Homeland Security, useless. We have the CIA, useless. FBI, useless. None of them seem to have warned the president. And if they did warn the president, how come he did nothing about it? Or did they all have something behind the scenes to do with this? Were they all in on the overthrow of the leaders of Tunisia and Egypt? If that's so, then why is it U.S. policy? If it's U.S. policy, why did they not think it through? Why did they not say, wait a minute, this could have unintended consequences? It may not result in a parliamentary system. It may result in the result in an Islamist regime taking over. Did they not see this? A ninth grader could see this. A ninth grade chess player could have predicted what would happen. And who do we have in power? People who play checkers. Bruce in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
We need you to keep talking about Egypt. I know you said before, should I talk about my dinner from last night and all that, but we need you to keep talking. Here's why. Last night I'm watching the news, and I said to my wife, something smells here, because every major channel has sent their news anchor over to Egypt to report on what's going on, and we don't normally do that here in this country. All they're concerned about is the weather and maybe the subway, new platforms and whatnot.
Right.
Something.
But did you notice that every network was covering it exactly the same way, calling them protesters? They had taken sides. They were calling them protesters as though they were simply students wanting their tuition to be lowered. I've never seen anything like this. It was one consistent story from the U.S. media. Mubarak, evil dictator, worst dictator in history, worse than Iran. No one mentioned Ahmadinejad and the murderous regime of the Iranian mullahs. All we heard about was Mubarak, who's been an ally of ours for 31 years. Did you hear any of that from the girls and boys in the media? I didn't.
I have to thank you, because after working all day, I get into the car, and lo and behold, you're giving out the answer to the question that I proposed last night. Why are we spending so much time on Egypt when this country's media normally doesn't care about any other country but ourselves? And you've got the answer. I got to congratulate you.
Well, because A, it's a big story. B, that we also know that if it bleeds, it leads. If it burns, it earns. We know that they love to steam up crowds in order to get good footage. We know that they did it in Israel. We know that they did it in Watts. We know that they feed the flames in order to sell newscasts back home. We know that they're the most evil people on the planet. We know that most people in broadcast journalism are the reason America's in decline. We also understand that the people in the broadcast business are also not the most intelligent people with almost no knowledge of history. We know all of this. And if it was not true, I wouldn't be in business, by the way. I got to tell you that right now, on a straight-out basis of survival, if they did their jobs, talk radio wouldn't have existed. Do you know that? You wouldn't waste your time listening to radio right now in your car if you got what you consider to be even a semblance of the truth from your evening news. But they've ceased to give any even a semblance of reality anymore.
Right through that. And believe me, I'm no rocket scientist, but I know something stinks. You seem to have the answer every time, even with your trickle-up poverty. I don't know.
Okay, I understand. It was a very good book. It still is a good book. It was written to warn America about Obama, and it was written to be used as a document to stop him in 2012. I think it's too late, because I see that John Boehner of the Republican Party has already taken the Obama line with regard to the Middle East. It is a gigantic collapse of Western leadership. We have no opposition party on the most important issue of our time, which is the collapse of the entire moderate Arab world. We have no opposition whatsoever. It's astounding to watch this. The domino effect is happening, and the Republicans in John Boehner, the pink shirt, is there saying Obama's doing a superb job. And by the way, how long have I told you that John McCain, in my opinion, was a fall guy to make sure that Obama became president. I told you that for a long time now. Do you know what McShane had to say the other day? He said it's time for Mubarak to go. In the middle of all of this, here is the big war hero, John McShane, instead of taking the side of this moderate Arab regime, instead of saying what good this man has done, instead of seeing beyond his own stupidity, he had the nerve to call for his immediate overthrow. And that's why it's good that John McShane has been exposed for the fraud he absolutely is. Now, let me go back to the warning that I give you in my essay, Obama and the Shadow Socialist Groups, the group behind Egypt's fall. It's on michaelsavage.com if you want to go right to the head of it. And you're going to see the Council on Foreign Relations. But most importantly, you're going to see something more important. You're going to see George Soros' name, Zbigniew Brzezinski, a longtime Jew hater, a longtime hater of Israel, in my opinion. They run a group called the International Crisis Group. Do you know who else is in this group? Sandy Berger, the man who got caught stealing documents out of the National Archives. Wesley Clark. Who else is in the group? Javier Solana. Who is Javier Solana? A very dangerous international socialist. Look, there's too much information for a radio show. It's something that's probably going to be in my next book, to be honest with you. It all has to be documented. If books are still legal in the year 2012, you'll read about it when the book comes out.
Savage.
We've been talking about the Egyptian riots and our government's involvement in this. Joining us now with a report on this is Ken Timmerman. Ken, you've written a series of stories on the crisis in Egypt over the past week that are up on Newsmax.com. I see the protests and the violence. Give us your view of what you see happening.
Well, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, Michael. You know, I think it's important to take a look at what's been going on here in Egypt, to the way the Obama administration has dealt with this growing crisis in Cairo and elsewhere in Egypt, and contrast that to the way they handled the Iranian crisis, when you had millions of protesters in the streets of Tehran in June of 2009. Now, the Iranians were protesting against a radical extremist regime, against Ahmadinejad's re-election. They accused him of fraud, and they were actually calling on the United States for support. What did Obama do? He said, we don't want to intervene. We don't want to interfere in Iran's domestic politics. He said, we don't want to be meddling in Iranian affairs. Now, fast forward that to just 10 days ago in Egypt, and you had hundreds of thousands of protesters in the street. They were calling an end for a long-standing American ally, Hosni Mubarak. They were certainly being, if not led by, supported by the Muslim Brotherhood. And what does Obama do? He jumps right in. He says, oh yes, Mubarak has to respect the protesters. Oh yes, there has to be democratic change. And you saw this gradual ratcheting up of pressure over a period of days until finally, just recently, Obama has now been openly calling for Mubarak to step down and to step down now. So there is, I think, a on the surface, what appears to be a dramatic difference between the way Obama responded in June of 2009 to the Iranian protests and the way he's responded to the ones in Cairo.
So you're confirming that Obama actually learned something between Iranian protests and June 2009, and now what could he have learned?
Well, now that's the point. Did he actually learn something between June of 2009 and January of 2011? I think not. I think actually we were seeing the exact same policy being carried out. In June of 2009 in Iran, Obama stepped in to support who? Not the freedom-loving pro-American demonstrators on the streets, but the radical Islamist regime in Tehran. And because Obama stepped in favor of the regime won. The people were dispirited, and ultimately those protests dissipated. Now, in January of 2011, Obama stepped in again in favor of the radical Islamist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. So I think, really, there's a through line here, if you wish. There is a continuity of policy. President Obama actually seems to prefer radical Islamic regimes to regimes that might favor the United States. He favors radical Islamic movements to a pro-people, pro-freedom, pro-American movement on the street, such as we saw in Iran.
So was all this happening in a void? Or as I think, as I said in my essay, was the White House in contact with these people and these gutter rats in the streets of Egypt?
Well, that's a very good question, Michael. There were, in fact, contacts between the White House and the Muslim Brotherhood. We know now from Egyptian press reporting that President Obama met with two senior members of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt in the White House in April of 2009, just a couple of weeks before he went to Cairo and made that famous speech where he offered a, quote, new beginning to the Muslim world in their relations with the United States. He also lifted a ban on the travel to the United States of Tariq Ramadan. This guy's a prominent Islamist scholar who just happens to be the grandson of the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama went out of his way to invite Muslim Brother members of Parliament to come visit, to come to his speech when he was in Cairo in June of 2009. So there are a whole series of gestures that he has made toward the Muslim Brotherhood since the really very early days of his presidency. They are unprecedented. Previous presidents have had no contact with the Muslim Brotherhood, but Obama seemed to think that they were a legitimate partner for the United States. By the way, just as he thought the Islamic Republic of Iran was a legitimate partner for the United States.
Okay, so what do you know about al-Baradei?
Well, now, al-Baradei is somebody who the Obama administration has been cultivating, really, since the very beginning also. Remember, this is the man who, at the International Atomic Energy Agency, up until just last year, was essentially a running point for the Iranians in hiding their nuclear weapons program, in shielding it from any kind of Western pressure. He was the Secretary General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, and he was consistently making up stories to downplay what the Iranians were doing, to downplay their refusal to come clean on their past nuclear activities, to cover up their weaponization plants, the documents that had been found by inspectors. He really was buying time for the Iranians ever since 2002, when we first got publicly, at least, information that the Iranians had this clandestine nuclear weapons program. So al-Baradei, he comes out of Vienna, comes back to Cairo 2 weeks ago. By the way, Rahm Emanuel has a better claim to residency in Chicago than al-Baradei does to residency in Cairo. He's lived in Vienna most of his adult life. But anyway, he comes back to Cairo and he claims to come in at the head of this vast pro-democracy movement. And then you find out later on that, in fact, he's come back with a deal. He's made a deal with the Muslim Brotherhood to be their front man in dealing with Mubarak, their front man in dealing with the United States.
You mean literally?
Well, front man, I mean quite literally front man. He made a deal with them. They agreed to stay in the background in these negotiations and allow Mohammed al-Baradei to be the man in the front who would openly be negotiating with the Mubarak regime and with the United States. President Obama, when he sent Frank Wisner, the former U.S. ambassador to Cairo, on Monday of this week, to essentially read the Riot Act to Mubarak, telling him he had to step down, Wisner turned around and he met with al-Baradei and ordered the U.S. Embassy in Cairo to meet with representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, you've been hearing a lot, Michael, about people here in the United States, foreign policy experts, people who claim to be experts on the Middle East, telling us that the Muslim Brotherhood is really just a garden variety Islamic group. There's nothing different from them than the Republican Party.
Right, right, right.
In fact, the Muslim Brotherhood remains what it always has been, which is a radical Islamist organization. They seek the imposition of Sharia law in Egypt. They seek the reestablishment of the caliphate, the world Islamic government. One of their top leaders, a guy named Mohammed Ghanem, gave the lie to al-Baradei's claim that the Brotherhood had shucked its radical roots and become a mainstream political organization. He was talking to Iran's main Arabic-language TV network. It's called Al Alam. And he said that Egypt should be prepared to close the Suez Canal to U.S. warships once the Brotherhood took over. And he says, quote, the people should be prepared for war against Israel. Now, that is not the statement of a kind of garden variety, religiously conservative group, which is what al-Baradei has been telling CNN and other TV networks. Now, the Obama people have also been turning to Bruce Sardell. He's a former CIA analyst. He helped craft their policy towards Afghanistan. Rydell has been going out on the airwaves saying that we have nothing to fear from the Muslim Brotherhood. And really, we shouldn't worry about a regime or a state that's governed by Sharia law because, it's a domestic Egyptian affair. They're not expansionist or anything else. But the Brotherhood has told us flat out they seek Islamic law in Egypt, and they seek the end of the peace treaty with Israel, and after that, they see the expansion of Islam throughout the Middle East as their goal.
Is this as bad for Israel as I think it is?
Well, it certainly means nothing good for Israel, Michael. That's for certain. Let me talk about that in just a second. It also means nothing good for Egypt's minorities, especially the Coptic Christians, who make up about 10% of Egypt's population. In my new book, St. Peter's Bones, which is about the persecuted Christian minorities in the Middle East, I write about what it's like to be a Christian in Egypt, what it's like to be a Christian in Jordan, in Iraq, what it's like to have your churches firebombed, members of your family kidnapped by Muslim jihadis. What's it like on the streets of Amman, Jordan, for example, if you are a Christian and you get into a taxi cab that's driven by a Muslim, and the fear that you have that you could be kidnapped? These kinds of things happen every day. In St. Peter's Bones, I wanted to tell a story so people could understand this in their gut. It's a war novel, really, about the war in Iraq. The narrator is a Christian interpreter for U.S. Special Forces there in Iraq, but it's also a love story, and it's a thriller about the origins of Islam. I think it's really important for Americans to understand what Islam is all about, how it began, and that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, St. Peter's Bones.
So more Christian persecution is what's going to happen once the Muslim Brotherhood takes over at the behest of Brzezinski and George Soros and their puppet Obama, huh?
Well, that's right. There's going to be more persecution of Christians in Egypt should the Muslim Brotherhood take power. And, of course, it will mean the immediate end to the peace treaty with Egypt. In my latest story at Newsmax, which was up on Friday, up at the head of the Newsmax.com website, I talk about what this will mean for the treaty. Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel gave a really moving speech to the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, on Wednesday when he said, some of you were born after we had the peace. You never were there for all of these battles we had in Egypt. For 31 years, we have not had to defend this border. It may have been a cold peace, but it was peace nonetheless. That is all possibly about to change if the Muslim Brotherhood comes to power. A number of the experts that I interviewed, Michael, for my stories in Israel, Dory Gold, the former UN ambassador of Israel, and a guy named Mordechai Kadar, who is at the Bar-Ilan University, a former military intelligence analyst, both of them agreed that the implications for the peace treaty will be absolutely dramatic. The Muslim Brotherhood does not want peace with Israel. They're already calling on their followers to prepare for war with Israel. So we can get ready, I'm afraid, for a very dramatic end to the Camp David Accords. The United States taxpayers have invested $63.7 billion in aid to Egypt alone, and all that's about to go down the tubes.
What do you think they should do?
Well, I think, Michael, the only place that we've got leverage today is with the Egyptian military. The military is well respected by the people in Egypt. They have been the ones that have actually been keeping the peace, such as it is, between the pro-Mubarak protesters and the anti-Mubarak protesters. There's some people in Congress, notably Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont, Democrat of Vermont, who wants to cut off all aid to the military in Egypt immediately as a way to force Mubarak to leave. But as one of the experts I interviewed said about this, he says, look, cutting off aid as a means of influence them doesn't translate into Arabic. A better proposal is being looked at by a number of Republicans today. They would like to condition U.S. military aid to Egypt on keeping the Muslim Brotherhood out of the future government. In other words, we say to the Egyptian army, hey, you can maintain this relationship with us. We'll keep on sending you spare parts. We'll let you continue to make the M1A1 Abrams tank, but you've got to keep the Muslim Brotherhood out of the government. I think that should be our absolute foreign policy priority. But let's see if Congress can win this one against President Obama, who clearly wants to empower the Muslim Brotherhood.
Thanks for the report, Ken Timmerman. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I've decided to spend a good portion of the rest of my time on Earth defending ending lab testing on chimpanzees. Let me be very blunt with you. I want to end all lab testing on chimpanzees, and I'm going to explain why. Let me take us back to where we are. The Islamofascists are dehumanizing the world. By killing even their own co-religionists with such brutality and a lack of humanity, many of us are starting to become less and less human on this planet. And in the midst of fighting an Islamofascist enemy that treats its victims less than human, we must remember and reaffirm our own humanity. We must remember that we have a responsibility to the innocent animals that God has placed on this earth. And because of that, and because of the fact that technology has eliminated the need for lab testing on chimpanzees, I am going to work to end such cruel and inhumane testing immediately. Now, I know there are others who have been working on this for ages, but I'm going to join them. You see, chimpanzees have a similar range of emotions to humans. Chimps feel themselves being strapped to a gurney. They feel when they're being tortured in a lab. They feel when they're being given diseases. They can also see their mates and friends being tortured in front of their eyes in laboratories, because all you got to do is go into a lab and hear them screaming out as their mate or their family or their friends are strapped to a gurney and tortured by these sick doctors. I say end all animal experiments on chimpanzees now. Now you say, Savage, where is this coming from all of a sudden? Is this something new? How come you're all of a sudden concerned about chimpanzees? In a way, it's new, and in a way, it's old. I began as a graduate student a long time ago. In fact, I don't know if I told you the story, but I lost a fellowship in 1968 in a laboratory because I wouldn't kill lab animals. Let me take you back there for a minute. In case you have the wrong impression of me, you may as well get the right impression of me. I think it was 1968, and I went back to graduate school, somewhat of an adult at the time, and I was working in a pharmacology laboratory. I won't say which university, which I really detested doing, because I heard my ancestors speaking to me and saying, you've come this far in life to clean rat feces? But what I couldn't do was, I didn't want to kill even the rats. I wouldn't kill them. So here was what happened. I had no money. I was a young graduate student, and I had a $300 a month stipend. $300 a month was enough to live on in those days. I had nothing else. I just arrived in this faraway place with my then girlfriend, and the lab guy who brought me out there said, "Here's the ultimatum that you have. You either kill the animals like you're supposed to, or I'm pulling your fellowship." I said, well, go ahead and pull my fellowship because I'm not killing animals. And I left the lab, and I had to wander around, and I wound up in a botany laboratory, and that's when I moved into botany because I didn't think I'd have to kill animals. But the point I'm making is we have an obligation to be good shepherds to our animal friends. And chimpanzees, of all the animals, of all of them, they are so close to us genetically. there's only a few enzymatic differences between us and chimps. I know many of you find it offensive because you don't even understand what I'm saying to you, but the truth is they're very closely related to us. The important thing to know is that they have a full range of emotions. Their bad luck, here's their bad luck. The bad luck for chimps is that they get the same disease as we do. And because they get the same disease as we do, the chimps are often substituted for humans in laboratories. So they're tortured by these sadistic so-called scientists for medical research. Now, I'm not against medical research, but I understand that with the advent of the computer and modeling, computer modeling, there's no need to do this to chimpanzees at all. And if you go into a laboratory, as I say, and you see what they do to chimpanzees, I think most of you would agree with me, your stomach would turn. When they take out one of the family members or friends of a chimpanzee, you say they don't know what's going on, listen to them scream in pain and go crazy as they watch their brother, their uncle, their cousin, or their girlfriend being strapped to a gurney by a sadist in a white coat. And as you hear their friend struggling to free themselves from the drugs and the chains to the gurney, believe me, they have the same range of emotions. It would be like experimenting on a human being by Dr. Mengele, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I wouldn't apply the same to a rat. I wouldn't apply the same to a rabbit. I would apply this concept to a chimpanzee owing to the close similarity between the chimpanzee and the human being. And if you think this is an odd thing for a conservative talk show host to be talking about, you're right, because I'm not a conservative talk show host. I'm an independent.
Savage.